The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm not there, though. I'm close. I'm driving across New York State, going to Chautauqua to enlighten all of the conservatives at Chautauqua. The decision is finally out in Dobbs. Colonel Kurt Schlichter will take you through it. I'll be back on Wednesday to amplify on whatever it is that they wrote. Take it away, Kurt Schlichter, and thank you.
Thank you, Hugh Hewitt. This is Kurt Schlichter sitting in for Hugh Hewitt on a pretty significant day. And it's a little ironic because Hugh Hewitt and a lot of other people have been waiting 50 years for today, 50 years for this show, 50 years for the first show post Roe v. Wade, post Casey. And of course, Hugh is off doing something else. I am here. Who am I? I am Kurt Schlichter, senior columnist at townhall.com, author of the new book, We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, which you should go pre-order. And you will hear me talk about a lot today. I'm a retired United States Army colonel of infantry. I am also, and this is significant, a noted California trial lawyer. And I am honored to be the guy who it falls to explain exactly what two momentous decisions from the Supreme Court from last week actually mean. Because I've been watching the news. I'm on Twitter every once in a while. You can follow me at Kurt Schlichter, spelled exactly as it sounds. And I have noticed that not a lot of people seem to understand exactly what both of these decisions mean. And you got to understand, they're momentous. Now, admittedly, I was not always at my best during con law, during law school. It was one of the first classes of the day. And, you know, young guy just out of the Gulf War in law school, at Loyola Law School, one of the top four law schools in Los Angeles. And maybe I didn't listen. But I think I think I listen more than a lot of the blue checks on Twitter, because they either don't know what the hell they're talking about or assume you don't know what the hell they're talking about. But these decisions, the other one being New York State Rifle Pistol Association versus Bruin, which expanded on the meaning of the Second Amendment, and Dobbs, which outright, right in the first paragraph, we are overruling Roe and Casey. These are the abortion cases. So these are two momentous cases. Thomas wrote the opinion in New York State Rifle Pistol Association. Samuel Alito wrote the opinion in Dobbs. There were concurring opinions. There were dissents. Now, how does this all work? What I'm trying to do is I'm going to leave the super deep, esoteric, con law deep dive to con law professor Hugh Hewitt when he comes back Wednesday, because I'm going to be here tomorrow. Assuming I don't completely screw this up. But what I want to do is give you a summary, give you an understanding for lay people, because that's why I do. I'm a trial lawyer, a little different than what Hugh did. Hugh did a lot of administrative stuff, a lot of arguments, a lot of briefings. My job is to go get 12 people, 12 citizens who want to do their duty, sit in the jury box and decide what's true or what not. But they need guidance of the law. And usually a judge will read them jury instructions to explain the law to them so they can apply the law to the facts as they determine them. So my job is to try and make things comprehensible to regular people instead of a bunch of damn lawyers. And I got to tell you, nobody's more annoyed with lawyers than a guy who has to deal with lawyers all the time as a lawyer. So that's my goal today, is to try and explain what these cases mean in a general sense, because a lot of people don't know. And we have young Jacob here, who is the new Ben. And he's, you know, Kurt, I don't understand what these mean. And I want to help him out. I want to help those who don't know. I want to help you out. Now, what does Dobbs not do? Dobbs does not ban abortion. I'm going to say it again, because if you read social media or listen to the communist networks, I'm sorry, the mainstream networks, and Democrat talking points, to the extent they differ, and there is no extent to which they differ, you might think that the Supreme Court decreed no more abortions ever. That could not be further from the truth. And you might, if you listen to someone like AOC or Big Chief Warren, and never listen to AOC or Big Chief Warren, but if you happen to, you might think that the Supreme Court took unto itself more power. It did the opposite. This is not the Supreme. Dobbs is not about the Supreme Court taking power. This is about the Supreme Court giving up power. And that power is to determine exactly how abortion will be handled in the United States. So if you let's understand that at the beginning. What Dobbs says is, one, there is no constitutional right to abortion in the Constitution. Two, because there is no constitutional right in abortion, it is not a question for the Supreme Court at all. And the Supreme Court's always got like three or four abortion cases that it's considering for its docket every year. You know, fetal heartbeat bills, late-term abortion bills, you know, other things. Every year it's got, you know, had a whole bunch of things. This is, we should not be in the business of talking about abortion. Supreme Court gave up that power. It says there's no constitutional right to abortion. So the power belongs to the states, to the state legislatures. And every state will be different. Now, there are a number of states that had trigger bills. That is, if Roe v. Wade and Casey, now, of course, Roe v. Wade was the original case back in like 73, and it laid out almost in a legislative kind of sense, a very strict, well, not that strict, but a framework of when abortion could be allowed, like you would expect in a law. Now, of course, I know what you're thinking. You're saying, wait a minute, I saw Schoolhouse Rock when I was a kid. Supreme Court's not supposed to make law. Why? That's the job of the legislature. Exactly. And then Casey came back, and it kind of changed it, because Roe was not a very well-reasoned decision. And I know that because Ruth Bader Ginsburg said so, and Lawrence Tribe, before he went completely insane, said so, and a lot of commentators said so. They liked the result. They didn't like the reasoning, because the reasoning wasn't very sensible. Their reasoning was, well, there's a constitutional right to abortion, kind of, because, and it boils down to, we really think it's a good idea. And that didn't really work. And it had a very detailed, kind of almost legislative outline of what you could and couldn't do with abortion. That wasn't workable. In 1992, Casey came down. They kind of changed the test a little. Became an undue burden on women. You can't unduly burden the right to an abortion. And what Samuel Alito said is, wait, you're wrong at the premise. There is no right to an abortion in the Constitution. Now, let's stop for a sec. Where do you get a right in the Constitution? First of all, remember, rights don't come from the Constitution. I'll say it again because there are some people who are unclear on it. Rights do not come from the Constitution. Rights are recognized in the Constitution. Human beings are endowed with certain freedoms. One, the right to speak freely, the right to worship as you see fit. Those are endowed by our Creator. They are recognized, those two, in the First Amendment, by the Constitution, but they don't come from the Constitution. If you look through the entire Constitution, including all the amendments, you will not find the word abortion, because it's not there. So it's not expressly recognized in the Constitution. Now, Constitution's also clear that all rights which we as human beings have, are not necessarily in the Constitution. Dobbs reiterates that those rights, how do you know those rights exist? Okay. You look at history. Were they recognized throughout history? And Samuel Alito goes through and says, look, even like 4 years before Roe v. Wade, 5 years before, abortion was outlawed in at least 40 states, or very heavily controlled in at least 40 states. Okay. We're going to be talking a lot more about Dobbs. I'm going to get to New York State Rifle Pistol Association. I am Kurt Schlichter with my trial lawyer hat on. Don't forget to get my book. We'll be back, The Fall and Rise of America, and stick around. And that powerful rock and roll from The Runaways, featuring Joan Jett and Sherry Curry and a bunch of other rocking ladies, can mean only one thing, that Kurt Schlichter is guest hosting here on the Hugh Hewitt radio program, and that we are joined by my friend, senior news editor at American Greatness, Liz Scheld. Hi, Liz.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, I am so excited that apparently the left has found out what women are again.
I know. I was also shocked that there was like a sudden, epiphany that there are women and they're not men. So I just was really surprised.
Well, I think it's pretty amazing. If I was a cynical guy, and of course, being a Los Angeles trial lawyer, I'm anything but cynical, I might think all that stuff about what is a woman was just nonsense. And they knew it all along.
You think they were pulling your leg for political purposes? No way.
Yeah, crazy talk, Liz Scheld. Okay. The left is melting down.
Yeah.
And I think it's hilarious. And I write about that at Town Hall with my new column, Go Ahead and Gloat. Because we've been fighting for this for 50 years, and I think we should enjoy it. No surprise here. We are not getting much of an accurate portrayal of what Dobbs really means. What do you think Dobbs means politically?
I think that I'm a strong federalist. So what Dobbs does as far as a judicial decision is it returns the abortion issue to the states, and each state can determine how they want to legislate around abortion. That's what doesn't ban abortion. Now, that's, of course, what we're hearing in a lot of the from a lot of the progressives and a lot of Democrat operatives trying to gin up their base. But abortion isn't banned. It just means that it will go to the states and the states will decide how to regulate and legislate around abortion. What does it mean politically? I don't think it's going to mean much politically as far as the 2022 elections and midterms go. This is going to make a big impression now, as it has. Ultimately, it will die down when people are talking about it and they are stuck with high gas prices and priced out of the housing market and dealing with a bad economy.
Yeah, Liz Scheld, I think you're right. Tell me if I'm wrong here. Everybody who has a really strong opinion about abortion, one that might change their vote, is already committed.
Yeah, right. I don't think that this is in all sorts of surveys we've seen over the years and even recent surveys. This isn't a top five issue like this issue. It's just not. And it's certainly not going to beat out, again, people who can't afford to live or feed their families. This is not, they're not going to say, yeah, you know what? I'm going to ignore that because I feel so strongly on this particular issue. I just don't see it. I just don't see it happening like that. So people are, the left is angry. They're working up their base. It's their favorite issue because let's be honest. The time to have codified Roe into law was when Obama had a supermajority in the first 2 years of his term back in 2008. They could have done it. They could have done every single thing they say they want to do. They could have done it. They had the votes. And they didn't do it. And why didn't they do it? Because they found that this is more valuable as a political issue in campaigns and to retain power than they believed it was an important principle. So, well, that's something to remember all the time.
Well, Liz Scheld, I think it's more of a base issue. in the sense that I don't think you're winning new people.
No. You're not moving. You know, in campaigns and elections, it's all about moving the needle. It's moving people from I'm not sure over to your team. There's just not a lot of I'm not sure right now. There's just not a lot of people. And I want to point out, the same people that are melting down, they're screaming on Instagram and on the social medias, and they're crying. These are the same people that were more than happy to be a supporter of federalism when it came to things like sanctuary cities and sanctuary states, where they thought it was fine that their state handled an issue they cared about differently than, let's say, the actual federal law or other states. They were fine with that, but now not so much. So you can see that this is not really an issue, a principle fight that's going on now. This is a political fight.
Liz Schell, why are Democrats so obsessed with abortion? And I'm going to write about that at Town Hall later this week, but I'm just wondering, why choose this issue? Because I could see liberals going the other way, saying we must preserve life, and instead they've chosen this particular aspect of this particular issue. And I think for most folks, the whole abortion question is distasteful. I mean, especially before I became publicly politically active, I just didn't want to think about it. And I think many Americans are like that; they find it distasteful.
Well, I think that's true, except when you're talking about like the younger cohort, right, that's voting or going to be voting. These are the very loud part of the population. They're the most visible on social media. They're the people most likely to go out into the streets and, threaten people with violence and make a scene. And that's how they're activated. So, you have much less number, 45-year-old people that are prepared to, go get arrested.
Well, except for the wine women.
Well, the wine women are very upset. The wine moms are women. Can you even say that? You don't know.
Well, there's an X in it instead of an E.
Okay. Women X.
Women X.
But that I think is, again, it's activating the people most likely to be visibly politically. And that way the media can portray it as that this decision goes grossly against popular will when, most people want limitations on abortion. I would say a plurality. It's not a majority, but a plurality of people do not believe you should be able to abort a baby when they're crowning at month 9.
Well, count Stacey Abrams out of that. I find it bizarre the way that they handle abortion, because they are unable to handle it in a politically sensible way. I mean, you can be for abortion and not for abortion when the kid's basically ready to fall on out.
I think it's crazy. I think most people, have want a limited amount of abortion. They do not want elective, 8 or 9 month abortion, or, it used to be something that was like a personal decision and it was
safe, legal, and rare.
Yeah,
became shout your abortion. How the hell did that happen?
And that's gross. And
it
is. The thing is that people are turned off by that. Again, safe, legal, and rare, that's a pill most people can swallow. This idea that early and often or all the time or, shout it out and put it on Twitter.
Bizarre.
That's gross.
Well, I think it turns off normal people, as do the protests. I don't want to be uncharitable, but many of the people who seem to be at the forefront of the abortion protests don't look to me like abortions are going to be an issue in their lives.
I mean,
a lot of them are really the freak show types. And you look at that and you have somebody who's kind of like, I don't like this issue. I guess we could have it, but it's distasteful, but safe, legal, and rare. And then you get some mutant with tattoos and a nose ring, looks like Ferdinand the Bull, screaming about, hands off my body. And no one wants to put hands on your body, lady, or whatever the hell you are. And I think it turns people off. I just find it tactically bad for the Democrats. There are better, more effective political ways of handling this if they chose to handle it. I still don't understand why the fight has to be about something
I don't
so
think they have a choice, Kurt. I mean, they're really hostage to their base.
Yes.
They need their base. So they don't have a choice to sit back and say, what is a good way to handle this that will not alienate even more people, right? Because the Democrat parties are bleeding registration.
I saw
there's a piece this morning from AP that says over a million people have switched their registration from Democrat to Republican. They aren't in a position to do that. They can't pull back and say, okay, let's figure out what a good way to do this. And if you look at just some of the stuff on social media, there's just these videos of these women screaming and yelling. And I want to say, is this really what is got you going? It seems like there's something more.
I know.
Is this it? Is this really what you're upset about? I feel like it's something else.
I don't get it because it doesn't make political sense to me. I mean, for pro-life people, you have the religious inclination, you have the moral inclination. And yes, there's political benefit to being pro-life in certain venues, not here in California, but in other places. But this just seems to be, for the Democrats, spiking the football in places they already dominate. I mean, in California, you know, Dobbs is a giant outrage. They already own California.
No, I mean, they're probably going to pass a law saying you can do a 10th-month abortion in California. And the same in New York and in Washington, D.C. The places where people are angry about this are not places where there will be abortion restriction.
Well,
so
that's
unusual. Like, why aren't people in Alabama and South Dakota, like, burning stuff down? I mean, maybe they are, and I just haven't seen it yet, but you don't see the same level of anger. I don't know. Maybe that's just something I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I don't think that exists. I think there was obviously some trouble in Arizona, which is kind of a purple state now.
Yeah.
Although I think Mark Kelly is going to lose to whoever ends up being nominated.
Violence is not politically helpful when it comes to the ballot box because people care much more about public safety than they do about almost any political issue.
Well, look, I think every political issue is more resonant to normal people than abortion. I think some people may go, well, you know, I heard that abortion's now banned, doesn't really matter in my life. I think that's kind of bad. And of course, they don't know what the decision actually says because they haven't been told by the mainstream media.
Well, there's a lot of violence against, like, pregnancy centers that help poor women. And I'm wondering, where's the payoff on that optic, right? Who's like, finally, they're going after the real villains here.
Take that, Jesus lovers!
What's going on?
You and your charity!
Yeah, it's just like, again, the optics on that is not helpful. And I don't know. I think that's why I think the party has lost control of its base and they are hostage to their base.
And I think it's not just on this. I think defund the police is just another example of this. Anyway, Liz Schild, the senior news editor at American Greatness, always greatness. When you join me as I guest host on the Hugh Hewitt radio program, I'm Kurt Schlichter. Stick around. We'll be right back with Selena Zito. We're back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I am guest host Kurt Schlichter, trial lawyer, author of the new book, We'll Be Back, The Fall and Rise of America, which you should go get. It is fantastic. Now, that music that you just heard, the bumper music, you can tell I'm guest hosting because my bumper music rocks. It's one of my favorite bands, The Clash. One of my favorite songs, Train in Vain. And it's introducing one of my favorite people, Selena Zito of the New York Post, Washington Examiner columnist. Selena, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
Good morning, sunshine. How are you?
I'm very, very good today. And I've been spending a lot of time explaining what Dobbs actually means. And the mainstream / communist media has not been doing that. Do normal people out there really have an understanding of what's going on?
I think that people, for the most part, have learned that if it's an important issue, they better do their own homework to find out what is really going on, because my profession really does a sucky job at it. So, yes, I think that people are much more informed than you might fear they aren't.
Well, Saleha, I think there's some people out there who are actually scared. A friend of mine relayed a story of a woman who's married to another woman who was, you know, I'm really scared they're going to come after me. And this, and that's crazy if you have actually read the opinion and understand it. But the media and the Democrats are ginning up this fear. And, you know, are people going to be able to figure out the truth?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always going to be a certain percentage that want to be afraid of the side they don't agree with, because that just justifies them, their sentiment. It helps them dig in more to their belief system. There's a percentage of people that are like that. However, most people are, I know this is shocking because if you go on social media or if you turn on cable news, you don't think people are thoughtful. But people are thoughtful and they do their homework. And I think that you have seen evidence of that, quite frankly, since 2010, when the first big wave election happened. You know, people weren't buying into grandma being is going to be pushed off a cliff. All of a sudden, they're like, wait a minute, that's not really going to happen. Okay, so what is going on? And when we had 2016 and 2020, I mean, I think 2016 is obviously an example of people not paying attention to what the status quo is telling them. But I also think 2020 is a great example of that, too. You know, there was a lot of pressure on people, in particular with all the Black Lives Matter and the George Floyd protests and, you know, everyone telling anyone who is conservative, if they vote conservative, they're a racist. However, if you look down ballot, everybody voted conservative. I mean, there was a very big wave, and that is really bucking all of our cultural curators who think that they can tell us what to do and we'll do it. Those days are over.
Well, Saleha Zito, I got to tell you, I look at how the Democrats have addressed abortion. And it you know, it obviously requires a moral decision by people, a political decision. I think a lot of people think the whole subject's distasteful. I think there are a lot of people who are like, yeah, safe, legal, and rare. Don't talk to me about it. And the Democrats have instead of following that strategy, which worked so well for Bill Clinton, and I'm just talking as a strategist here.
Yeah.
Instead, they've got these, you know, tattooed mutant people. And when I say mutant, I'm not trying to be mean. These are weird looking people who are acting nuts, shouting their abortion. I've had three abortions and it's empowered me as a woman. And normal people, I think, look at that and go, these people are crazy.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, you always think when a big decision or a political, big political moment happens, that you look at the other side and go, it's inevitable they're going to go too far. It's inevitable the Democrats are going to go too far. And you think it's going to be weeks. What was day one when they went too far?
I mean, when you have someone like Stacey Abrams who refuses to say, you know, an eight-month, three-week baby can be aborted anytime for any reason. I mean, that's crazy. Who's for that except nuts?
Well, and it's really interesting to me, but also you see the quote-unquote save the Democrat in Ohio, Tim Ryan, saying the exact same thing.
That's just nuts to me. That's just crazy. Saleha Zito, nothing crazy there. You are a voice of common sense. I'm sure I'll be talking to you soon, and I know you'll be back next week on the New Hewitt Radio program. Stick around. I'm guest host Kurt Schlichter, author of the new book. We'll be back. Fallen Rights of America.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172.
We are back on the Hugh Hewitt radio program. I'm the lawyer. My next guest, Cam Edwards of Bearing Arms, is the guns, and he is money. Cam, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
Good Monday morning to you, Kurt. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. How are you feeling about New York State Rifle Pistol Association? What did you think of that decision?
I'm feeling really good about it. I'm actually curious to see what happens today. You know, there are four cases that the court has been holding in conference, in some cases for like 9 months, dealing with the Second Amendment. And I'm curious to see if the Bruin decision has any immediate impact. If the court decides to take one of those cases, if they send them all back down to lower courts. But either way, you know, this really was a tour de force decision by Clarence Thomas. And I think every Second Amendment supporter should feel really, really good about what he had to say last week.
Well, the New York case said that in the six states that still require some sort of good cause to exercise your right to keep and bear arms, particularly bearing arms. That means carrying them around. That's just unconstitutional. You do not have to show any special entitlement or need to exercise a right that's expressly in the Constitution. And since carrying arms was not a restriction recognized at the time of the implementation of the Second Amendment, it is a It's an unconstitutional requirement. And we already saw results in California. Our attorney general sent out a guidance saying you can't enforce that. Of course, now what they want to enforce is, well, but you can still try, you know, demand that they show good character. And of course, good character in a case they cite, in a example they cite, might include having appropriate beliefs as expressed in social media. You think they're going to spend a lot of time trying to find ways to weasel around the Bruin case?
Yeah, oh, I absolutely do. And I think Clarence Thomas anticipated that, and he talked about this in the decision. But, yeah, I mean, the suitability standard, I think, is going to be the new may issue or the new justifiable need, right? Because he noted that there are several states that allow, you know, subjective determinations of whether or not somebody is suitable to carry a firearm.
And it was that, and it was the subjective nature of the requirement overruled in Bruin, which is, do you have need? This objective is, are you suitable? And
right.
And you can make objective criteria. Say, this guy is not a convicted felon. He's not insane. But of course, they don't want to do that.
Right, and that's the thing. And so Thomas noted that the three states that have these sort of suitability requirements on the books operate, in essence, as shall-issue states, meaning that the vast majority of applicants are approved because there's no real reason to deny them.
Right.
And I think that's the real test for Clarence Thomas. He didn't come out and say, listen, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this. He said at the end of the day, if the average citizen doesn't have the ability to carry a firearm in self-defense in most places, then you're violating their Second Amendment rights.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's the fundamental nature of this. So, yeah, California can try to screw around with, you know, suitability standards. New York is going to try to do the same. So is New Jersey. But they're going to get hauled back into court. And if they're abusing those suitability standards to say, well, you know, we think you voted MAGA, so we don't think you're suitable to carry a firearm, that's not going to fly. And those laws are going to be struck down as well. It may take another round or two of lawsuits, but I think ultimately the Democrats are going to be dragged kicking and screaming towards recognizing that, yes, the right to keep and bear arms is a real right, and you have to treat it as such.
Well, Cam Edwards of Bearing Arms, let me ask you, there's lots of talk about concealed carry reciprocity. Now, I have a non-California permit that allows me to carry in about like 30-some states. And they have reciprocity. Other states don't recognize reciprocity. Do you think Bruin is going to kind of force that? Because if I have a right to a shall issue permit in California and I get my permit in California, but say North Dakota doesn't recognize it, if I go visit North Dakota, I'm suddenly stripped of my Second Amendment rights, though I have a permit.
Right. And yeah, I do think that Bruin sort of brings this question to the forefront. Now, I don't necessarily know that it's going to lead to national right to carry reciprocity, because I think an argument that the court would go for is As long as these states offer non-residents the ability to acquire a permit to carry so that if they're in that state, they can carry. Then you don't need to necessarily have reciprocity with other states to recognize their license.
But what if you're just passing through? For instance, well, do I lose because I choose to drive across, say, I-80 through Nebraska? Do I suddenly lose my right to keep and bear arms because I'm only going to be in Nebraska for 30 minutes? Or, well, actually, like 5 hours.
I was going to say, what part of Nebraska are you?
I know, right? The corner, just the tip.
No, listen, that is a fantastic question. And again, it speaks to the sort of second-class nature that Democrats and too many judges have treated the Second Amendment that Clarence Thomas talked about. Because you're right, there is no other right that we possess that ends at the borders of our state line, right? When you're on the air in California, filling in for Hugh, you have the same First Amendment right as you do if you're speaking on the street in Virginia. It doesn't matter that you're now in another state. So why is the Second Amendment the one right where as soon as you leave the boundaries of your home state, all of a sudden now everything changes?
And that's a federal constitutional right as opposed to Dobbs. In which a state is perfectly, and California does, give you that right. It recognizes a right. In California, you have a right to an abortion in ways you might not in other states, but it's not a federal constitutional right like the right to keep and bear arms.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, this is one of the live issues that's going to be before the court. And what's interesting is I'm not aware of any current cases that are sort of percolating out there right now that involve a challenge to a lack of reciprocity. But I think that those cases are coming and probably sooner rather than later. I mean, I know that there were Second Amendment attorneys this weekend, you know, who were strategizing with 2A groups about, okay, what's the first priority? You know, where do we go from here? And I would imagine that right to carry reciprocity is among those items on the top of the wish list.
Well, you know, Cam Edwards of Bearing Arms, it would have been nice if John Cornyn, in his compromise, which got us nothing, had included national right to carry reciprocity. You know, I disagree with you, Hewitt. Hugh supports John Cornyn's plan. I do not. First of all, let's talk about it politically. I don't think we got anything out of it. A compromise requires compromise. Yeah, we got, you know, security at schools and everything, but that I don't see why we have to trade that for gun rights. That should have stood on its own. If we're giving up, and I wouldn't have gone for a compromise, but if we're going to give up something, you would think that we would get something out of it.
Yeah, this was one of those compromises where, you know, the folks that I've talked to who were aware of sort of the initial starting point for Democrats said, listen, you know, it could be so much worse.
Well,
it could have been so much worse.
See, now,
I know.
Look, as a lawyer, if I go to my client and go, hey, great news, I gave them less than they wanted and you got nothing. Mm-hmm. See, I would be an unemployed lawyer.
Right.
And I think John Cornyn just made a bad deal. I mean, how about hearing protection legislation to allow people to have suppressors easily,
right,
so they're not hurting their ears? That seems like something reasonable. I might not have gone for the compromise, but we'd have gotten something.
I'm with you, but I don't think that was the I don't think that was the metric. I don't even think that they tried to include it in this thing.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I'm concerned about the red flag laws, as you are too. And here's my take on it. I've seen the movie Minority Report. And I learned from it. And of course, being a guy from Los Angeles, one of my friends was actually in it. You know, this whole idea of pre-crime where you're a risk. We're going to take your guns. It seems odd. If you're a criminal, we can deal with you constitutionally. If you're insane, if you're 5150, like the old Van Halen album, we can deal with you constitutionally. But there's this now new thing where we're going to take one of your rights, but we're not going to take you in and get you treatment. And we're not going to, you know, make sure you can't go get a gun somewhere else because you're in jail or a loony bin. I don't see it as practically smart. I don't see it as constitutional. I don't see a constitutional process for taking a right when you've done nothing wrong.
Listen, I'm with you, and I know that folks say, "Well, look, we got temporary restraining orders. It's just like that. Only with a gun."
Is it
beyond the due process concerns? You, I think, hit on the real key. Whether or not you think these red flag laws are constitutional or not, the fact is they involve a judge saying this person's dangerous.
Yes,
let's go take their guns away. Okay, now we've solved the problem, right?
Well,
and no, you haven't. If you're dealing with a dangerous individual, then you have to treat that individual's dangerousness. But you're right. Well, I'm not aware of any red flag law on the books that actually has a mental health component to it. Okay, you're dangerous. Here's what we're going to do to make sure that you get the help that we think you need. This is a gun control measure that is designed to look like a mental health bill.
It's
designed to give politicians cover because they can say, look, we passed these red flag laws. Now we don't have to worry about the bed shortage in inpatient psychiatric hospitals. We don't have to think about the fact that people who are in crisis are sitting in jail cells for a couple of days because we don't have room to get them into a hospital or a psychiatric facility. There is a real crisis. And these red flag laws allow politicians to ignore it.
Well, they also allow Cam Edwards of Bearing Arms. They also it's premised on the idea that the judicial system's going to fairly and quickly adjudicate your rights. And from what we've seen, I don't see why anyone would believe that. We got about 15 seconds.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, listen, the rubber stamping of these preliminary orders by judges is well known. It's one of the many flaws we have in these red flag laws.
Well, thank you, Cam Edwards of Bearing Arms. This is Kurt Schlichter. Michael Walsh joins us. He's got a new one up at the pipeline, cleverly titled Guns and Roses, R-O-E-S-E-S. Michael, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt radio program.
Hey, good morning, Colonel. How are you?
I'm good. I thought that was a very clever title and a very good article at the pipeline, the-pipeline.org.
Thank you very much, and we hope that our listeners out there in Radio Land will come on over to thepipeline.org and check it out.
Well, they should check it out, and they should check it out every day. But, Michael, your point is more than just the gun case and more than just the abortion case. It's that liberals are melting down because they cannot take being denied.
No, they can't. They're like little children. You know, Kurt, you've known me for a long time. I've been saying this for years. It was 7 years ago this week that The Devil's Pleasure Palace came out. And it's very gratifying to me, I must say, to see people say, oh, my God, you were so right in that book. Wow, were you ahead of the curve? Blah, blah, blah. So I'm thrilled that a broken down old man like me now is finally getting some love from the younger conservatives out there.
Well, Michael, you're an experienced guy. I mean, you were part of the mainstream media. You were actually reporting from behind the Iron Curtain when there was an Iron Curtain. Heck, you even clinked glasses at some embassy party with a little dude named Vladimir Putin.
Well, I certainly saw that little dude Vladimir Putin in Dresden. Yeah, I like to say I was in Berlin when the wall came down, and I was in Russia when Chernobyl blew up. So I had a good Cold War. How was yours, Kurt?
Well, I was in Stuttgart, Germany, getting ready to die in place when they came across the border. Luckily, that didn't happen.
Okay.
But you've seen communists up close and personal.
Yes.
And none of this stuff that you're seeing now from the Democrat Party, which frankly seems to be moving in a commie direction, none of this is surprising to you.
Not at all. I mean, it's the same playbook every time. Now, I'm 72, so I went to college between 1967 and 1971, and it's deja vu all over again, as Yogi Berra or somebody once said. I've seen this movie. It was bad the first time. It's worse the second time. And yet, it seems like every generation has to learn the lessons the hard way, which is this doesn't work, and it ends in death and misery and prison and dirt and stink. I'll tell you, Kurt, the one thing I always knew about communist countries, you could parachute me in blindfolded.
Yes.
And as soon as I caught a whiff of them, I said, oh, baby, I'm back in the USSR.
Michael, you could not be more correct. Of course, I served in Kosovo, former Yugoslavia, for a year. I spent a lot of time in Ukraine, four different trips, training Ukrainian soldiers. And there's a smell.
Yeah.
There's a kind of chemical disinfectant smell. But it's more than that. You can almost smell the corpses.
Oh, I said in my first novel, Exchange Alley, it's a combination of urine and sweat and coal stink and diesel fuel.
Bad cigarettes.
B.O. and cigarettes. I'll put all that in a shaker and blend it up, baby, because that's what it smells like.
And, of course, that's what they want here. They want us, as you point out in your article, Guns N' Roses in the Pipeline at the-pipeline.org, you point out, you know, they want us poor. They want us without cars and the ability to move ourselves. They want us eating bugs. Why do they want us miserable? You would think that they would want us happy so we would support them, but that's not how their minds work.
No. As I pointed out that for the first time today, but they're like Islam or like the old Brezhnev doctrine, speaking of the Soviet Union, that once they conquer something, it can never change, can never go back. You know, once they build that mosque or once they put up the Red Star on the churches at the Kremlin, then it's that way forever. And it usually takes, well, in the case of communism, 75 years. For the people to say, boy, this place really smells bad. We got to do something about it. But we have to learn over and over and over. The young people today have no clue what's coming at them, except you ain't going to like it.
You know, Michael Walsh, I was out speaking to some lovely Republican women at the West Valley Republican Women Federated. And it was very interesting. We were at a country club and the organizer said, look, I it was very interesting. I was having a lot of trouble with the country club, which did a fine job, but they were very insistent that they couldn't give us more seats because I was as I sold out and more people wanted to come because I'm amazing. And she wondered why, because they never had that problem before. Turns out that they weren't being difficult. Their supplier said we can't get more chicken breasts and more salmon. Their suppliers in America said we can't get enough chicken breasts and salmon. When the hell, since the 1940s, where there was rationing, did someone in America, you know, have trouble getting chicken breasts and salmon?
Yeah, you know what we're going to turn into? This is a place near and dear to your heart, is Cuba. We're not going to be able to get parts for our cars. So you're going to see people driving 25-year-old junkers down the middle of the street with cannibalized parts, because I had to get my car fixed last year, and it took months to get some of these parts. Now, my car is a little bit older, but still, this is America.
It's a classic.
Dude, you don't have empty store shelves, for crying out loud.
That's not America. That's not the America I grew up. How come, Michael Walsh, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. It never occurred to me that I could walk into a store and not be able to get what I needed, that a woman couldn't get tampons, for gosh sakes. I mean,
baby formula.
Why? Right. Oh, baby formula. This is insane. And, of course, you got, you know, President Gumby. He's talking about a vaccine plan in Senegal. Okay, I got none against Senegal, but I'd like to be able to get baby formula and tampons.
Yeah, but the part of the strategy is to reduce your mobility.
Yes.
Gas will be prohibitively expensive. The airlines are in chaos.
Oh, don't even get me started.
Country. The only thing that makes America work is that we had the greatest transportation system, and we could get from New York to L.A. in a few hours. We could take a train across the country in the 19th century. Europe never had this problem, and we solved it, and now they want to wreck it, and that will keep you in your place. And you better learn your place, Buster. The Great Reset is coming down the road and heading your way.
Well, look, I'm optimistic. My new book will be back, The Fall and Rise of America. Spoiler, I think we have the capability of beating this. I don't know if we will. But look, I think normal Americans are deeply unsatisfied with a vision of a future which is poorer and less free and more miserable. And I think we're going to see the pushback at the ballot box in November.
Well, let's wonder if it does any good. If I can get a quick plug in here.
Plug away.
For our book, Against the Great Reset, which is coming out in October. Tomorrow on thepipeline.org, you will see an excerpt from the second of the 18 essays. I've collected the 1927 Yankees of conservative thought and writers. Lots of famous names. Tomorrow is Victor Davis Hanson, whose essay, The Great Regression, is the second in the book. Last week, I had an excerpt from my introduction, And every Tuesday from now until October 18th, which is pub date for Against the Great Reset, you will get a free, absolutely 100% free, little glimpse of what we've got in store to fight these people who come out of the World Economic Forum, come out of Davos, and want you to live in a high rise, have no car, eat bugs, and get sex reassignment for free. You will own nothing and be happy. That's their slogan. It's coming your way.
I just don't think Americans want to do that. And I think we are seeing the pushback. We're seeing the pushback at the Supreme Court, obviously. I think we're going to see pushback at the ballot box. And normal Americans don't like this nonsense.
No, they don't. But they don't know what's coming. Here's the interesting thing, Kurt. We've talked to people in Britain, especially, and they say, oh, this Great Reset is, what is it? I've never heard of it. It's some right-wing conspiracy thing. No, it's not. It's coming. And so we have people like Victor. We have Conrad Black. We have Douglas Murray. We have Roger Kimball, Richard Fernandez. I mean, there's six guys, the late Angelo Codevilla. I mean, you know, you want that team on the field for you? Well, it's coming.
That's going to be, it's going to be outstanding. Against the Great Reset, coming October 18th. Go ahead and pre-order that stuff.
Now, yes, look, please do.
Look, I think the great, you know, this Great Reset, and it's not a conspiracy theory. These guys, this is a good term that applies to the conglomeration of initiatives and fetishes that the left have. I think it also opens a huge opportunity for aggressive reactionary politicians, reactionary towards this horrible trend. And yes. I think we saw it in 2016 with Donald Trump. I think we may see it again with either Donald Trump 2.0 or someone like Ron DeSantis. We got about 15 seconds. What do you think? Is there an opportunity?
I think there's a great opportunity. The question is, we have to clear our minds of these pre-existing prejudices and understand we're in the fight of our lives, and it's time for every man to get a mitt and get in the game.
Ah, inspiring. Read Michael Walsh's new column, Guns and Roses, R-O-E-S-E-S, at the-pipeline.org. And check out that preview tomorrow at the same place. I'm Kurt Schlichter, guest hosting for the great Hugh Hewitt. We're going to be right back. Stick around.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.